This time, the plunge does not need to be represented by silence, because the terror of the long, dark fall was alleviated. The word alleviated here means not particularly on Sunny's mind, because the youngest Baudelaire knew that Annette and her siblings were waiting for her at the bottom. With a thump, Sunny landed on the net, and with a slightly smaller thump, the coil of rope landed next to her. After making sure her sister was unharmed by the fall, Violet began tying one end of the rope to one of the pegs holding the net in place. "I'll make sure this end of the rope is secured," Violet said. "Sunny, if your teeth aren't too sore from the climb, use them to cut a hole in the net so we can climb through it." "What can I do?" Klaus asked. "You can pray this works," Violet said. But the Baudelaire sisters were so quick with their tasks that there was no time for even the shortest of religious ceremonies. In a matter of moments, Violet had attached the rope to the peg with some complicated and powerful knots, and Sunny had cut a child-sized hole in the middle of the net. Violet dangled the rope down the hole, and the three children listened until they heard the familiar clink of their ersatz rope against the metal cage. The Baudelaire orphans paused for a moment at the hole in the net and stared down into the blackness. "I can't believe we're climbing down this passageway again," Violet said. "I know what you mean," Klaus said. "If someone had asked me that day at the beach if I ever thought we'd be climbing up and down an empty elevator shaft in an attempt to rescue a pair of triplets, I would have said, 'Never in a million years.' And now we're doing it for the fifth time in 24 hours. What happened to us? What led us to this awful place we're staring at now?" "Misfortune," Violet said quietly. "A terrible fire," Klaus said.
"Olaf,"
Sunny said decisively, and began crawling down the rope. Klaus followed his sister down through the hole in the net, and Violet followed Klaus, and the three Baudelaires made the long trek down the bottom half of the passageway until they reached the tiny, filthy room, the empty cage, and the hallway that they hoped would lead them to the inn auction. Sunny squinted up at their rope, making sure that her siblings had safely reached the bottom. Klaus squinted at the hallway, trying to see how long it was, or if there was anybody or anything lurking in it. And Violet squinted in the corner, at the welding torches the children had thrown in the corner when the time had not been ripe to use them. "We should take these with us," she said. "But why?" Klaus asked. "They've certainly cooled off long ago." "They have," Violet said, picking one up. "And the tips are all bent from throwing them in the corner, but they still might come in handy for something. We don't know what we'll encounter in that hallway, and I don't want to come up short-handed. Here, Klaus, here's yours, and here's Sunny's." The younger Baudelaires took the bent, cooled fire tongs, and then, sticking close to one another, all three children took their first few steps down the hallway. In the utter darkness of this terrible place, the fire tongs seemed like long, slender extensions of the Baudelaire's hands, instead of inventions they were each holding. But this was not what Violet had meant when she said she didn't want them to be short-handed. Short-handed is a word which here means unprepared. And Violet was thinking that three children alone in a dark hallway, holding fire tongs, were perhaps a bit more prepared than three children alone in a dark hallway, holding nothing at all. And I'm sorry to tell you that the eldest Baudelaire was absolutely right. The three children couldn't afford to be short-handed at all, not with the unfair advantage that was lurking at the end of their walk. As they took one cautious step after another, the Baudelaire orphans needed to be as long-handed as possible for the element of surprise that was waiting for them when the dark hallway came to an end.
End of disc 3.